Okay, morning everybody. Bright and early. Can't be too many people who went to the party last night, which is good. We've got a lot to get through, so I'm going to get started straight away. Git and Visual Studio. I was a bit of a latecomer to the whole Git excitement. You know, it's source control, how exciting can it be? We have good source control. And everyone keeps saying, no, Git's the thing. Git's really where it's at. It's very different to what you're used to. It enables all these new workflows, and I struggled to get it for a while. Recently, I spent a lot more time working with Git, and finally, actually, someone sat down with me and took me through a bunch of concepts that no one had done before, and the penny dropped. And now I'm on the kind of Git fanboy side of the fence. So I thought it'd be interesting to show you those same concepts that someone showed me and see if that relates to you in the same way, to see if you kind of get the same light bulb moment I did, and also kind of what's new in Visual Studio, what can we do in Visual Studio and Visual Studio Online or Team Foundation Server on-premise now in terms of enabling that Git functionality. Right? So it's not all command line or bash scripts or you know the kind of some of the demos that you may have seen before. Who uses Git all day, every day today? Okay, so maybe about a third. Who hasn't used Git really at all yet? Okay, just a few more. Okay, so hopefully I've got something for everyone. Certainly got something for the people that Git's going to be new for. And then if you hang, those people who use it all day, every day, stay with me. So at the end, we're going to have a bit of, hopefully, something you haven't seen before in Git. Okay, so I've got something for you, but it's going to be closer to the end. Okay, so my details up there. I'm a Visual Studio ALM MVP, which is a bit of a mouthful. So I spend a lot of time working with teams on their tooling, you know, Visual Studio, on Team Foundation Server, on making sure they can get the most out of the Microsoft products. I don't work for Microsoft. I'm independent. So straight away, I broke the golden presentation rule, right? You're only allowed three things. No, because I need to squeeze some of this cool demos in. So I want to cover kind of briefly what is it, why you should use it. So again, just source control. We've got plenty of decent source control options. Why Git in particular? What can I do with Visual Studio? When do I have to drop out? Kind of maybe what's coming next in Visual Studio? And in there, I'm going to cover what's in Visual Studio Online and Team Foundation Server as well, right? So both from a Git client point of view and hosting of repositories on the server as well. We'll look at some Git workflows. So ways of working that really aren't possible with other types of source control system. So this type of source control system enables some new processes within our team, right? So we can work in different ways than we're used to. So it'll be interesting to see if you see value in those new ways of working. And finally, right, some hopefully things in for the Git diehards you haven't seen before. Okay, so how do we get here? Anyone use Team Foundation Server 2005? My apologies. We all remember these golden days, right? Team system, and we had team developer and all these kind of nice titles that have gone by the wayside. This was the big SourceSafe replacement for most of us, right? We installed this, finally we could get rid of SourceSafe, which was corrupting on a daily basis, and get a real source control system. And it came with server workspaces. So what do server workspaces feel like? Everybody's watching you all the time, right? You can't do anything without notifications, without permission checks. So the police are everywhere. It's really one of those police cars I'd love to drive if I ever go to the police. Just one. So if I want to check out, permission check, right? If I want to do anything, permission check. So we go through this kind of check out, edit, check in flow. The server always knows everything I'm about to try and do. So read-only bits on the files right before I can even edit them, which locks me into certain types of development tools which know how to do the checkout for me. Microsoft didn't build this for us. They didn't build this for their customers. Microsoft built this for themselves. Right, to build Visual Studio, to build the compilers, they have another set of compilers. So they get these other set of compilers, compile the compilers, start compiling Visual Studio. To do a build of Visual Studio requires 2 gig of data on your local disk. So your workspace has got 2 gig of source code files in it. That scale of problem doesn't work with solutions that scan directories looking for changes. Right? You need a very fine-grained mechanism like this. So this is why they built it. It was for them to build their software. Right? But they sold it to us. 7 long years later, in Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server 2012, we got a new default, right? We got local workspaces. So they finally changed the model and updated it. And if the sort of police everywhere was the feeling we got from server workspaces, local workspaces was kind of a bit better, right? We're being watched, but they're not kind of in your face quite so much. So local workspaces gave us a new way of working, right? So we could now edit, merge, check in. No read-only bit on the files, right? We didn't have to ask permission to check out a file. Check out basically disappeared. And it did this by scanning your workspace. So there was just a .NET file watcher checking what was going on in your workspace directory, picking up any changes you'd made. This was quite a big change, though, right? Because it enabled new development tools to be used against Visual Team Foundation Server source control. So I can use Notepad, I can use SAP development tools, I can drop outside of Visual Studio, still get good source control integration. So it was a way forwards. But offline was average. Offline in server workspaces, right, forget it, you just got constant reminders. Offline was average here. I could do a few local things, but I couldn't do anything that would create history offline. So what was next? Distributed version control. Wind back a couple of years. I was at the MVP summit in Microsoft. So they invite once a year all the MVPs to go to Redmond, look at the new versions of the products, they get some feedback, they listen to some feedback, they don't listen to some feedback, right? But you get kind of an early preview of what's coming. And they said, you know, distributed version control is taking over the world. It's the way forwards. We have to have a story around distributed version control. So everyone's kind of nodding, yep, this is good. We like where this is going. And they said, we've decided not to build our own distributed version control system. It would take a year's worth of effort. There's no point. We've decided we're going to use Git. Tumbleweeds through the room. Everybody was silent. People kind of looking at each other going, uh-oh, we've been here before. What happens when Microsoft decide they're going to integrate with an open source platform or a widely used industry standard platform? Remember this? Write once, run anywhere. No. Write once, run once. We've decided it's Windows Java. And we won't even talk about that. Right, so they had this history. And the media even gave it a terminology, right? So this embrace, was it extend, extinguish? And they called it this Microsoft strategy for, you know, we see a competitive product, we're going to integrate with it, add some Windows-specific features, and then effectively it's going to die out because it doesn't have the cross-platform support it started with. So there was a bit of nervousness in the room. Thankfully, it didn't turn into that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. So what we got was real Git integrated as a first-class citizen into the Microsoft stack. So it's not feature complete. There are things that I can't yet do in Visual Studio, but it's real. And what it is just Git, right? There's no specific extra flavors that have been added to it. I'm going to pull through all of this. So what does it look like? If we start at the top and look at Visual Studio, we obviously got our traditional Team Foundation version control. And on the right-hand side of that box, you can see we've got libgit2. libgit2 is open source. It's an open source library for integrating with Git, right, for doing Git. And it's hosted on GitHub. And whilst Microsoft were building this out in secret, all these Microsoft employees suddenly became top contributors on GitHub to the libgit2 library. So it's funny, right? You've got a totally competitive product. Microsoft devs full-time, as part of their paid job, are kind of rounding out the functionality of libgit2, ready to announce their new product. Nobody noticed, which was lucky. Because of that, because it's libgit2, that means that I can work with local repos, I can work with any other Git-hosted repositories. So from Visual Studio, I can go to GitHub, I can go to Bitbucket, I can go to wherever you want to host your Git. So you're not tied to Microsoft's server story, right? So again, it's real Git. It's not specific to Microsoft. If we look over on the server side, you can see we can either host at a project level, so it's a project level decision in terms of Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online. We can host our project and say we want our repository to be either Team Foundation version control or Git. And again, real Git. And because of that, I can host it in Visual Studio Online, And I can use Xcode, I can use Eclipse, I can use whatever development tool supports Git, command line, right, to interact with that repository. So the nice story is they're completely interchangeable. I like the server story, I don't like the client story, or vice versa. So I can make my choices. Okay, so we looked at, you know, the police everywhere, server workspaces, a little bit better with the security cameras on our local workspaces. Git support came in Visual Studio 2013. And how does that feel? Yeah, kind of. Everyone's happy. We can do a whole bunch of different things that we couldn't do before. Great for geographically distributed teams. I have the whole repository with all the history locally. So do you, so do you, so do you, right? So everyone has a full copy of the repository with everything in it, which means we don't even need a central server if we don't want to, right? We can just push and fetch changes in between all of us. Right, so a very different way of working from what we're used to with server and local workspaces. I can change history without talking to the server. I can commit locally, right? I'm not going to the server. I don't need permission checks to be able to do that. I have this new workflow of commit local, and then when I choose to, I can iterate locally, committing. I push up to a central repository, like whatever we bless, our master repository or our origin repository. We'll talk about more of that later. And I can pull changes down when I'm ready. Right, so it's like a two-phased idea. Commit local, push up to the main server when I'm ready. I can also branch and merge locally. And branching and merging is kind of a key differentiator for Git. It feels like a file system. And Linus, who invented Git, was asked this question. Why did you make it kind of like a file system? And he said, I know how to build file systems. I have a lot of experience in file systems, so it's a natural way for me to build things. So we took this source control kind of paradigm and fit it into a file system idea. So when you look at what a commit looks like, you'll see it very much feels like a file system, something we're used to, and that makes it quite simple to interact with. It's become like an interchange standard, right? It's become a way to communicate across source control management systems, so integrate between two and keep them in sync. It's become a deployment protocol. You look at, you know, Heroku and Azure and AppVeyor and all these different providers, they use Git as a way to do continuous delivery or continuous deployment. So because of all these things, that reinforces Microsoft's decision, don't build your own, right? There's this industry-leading one out there that's actually becoming more than just source control. And it's great cross-platform support, you know, given where it came from. And actually, until Visual Studio, you could argue the worst platform support was Windows. Okay. So centralized version control, we all know, and possibly still love, which is this delta model, right? So first version is all the full fidelity copy of each file. When I check in version 2, it stores the deltas, and so on and so on, right? So version 3, if I change file B and C, it stores those deltas. And then when I want to get the latest, it takes the full fidelity version, applies the deltas to say this is the latest version. Actually, most of them work the other way around these days. They work off a reverse delta model. So they store the full fidelity copy as the latest, and deltas going backwards. But it's the same concept, right? That's just a performance enhancement. So what's different with distributed version control, decentralized version control like Git? Every version is a full copy, a snapshot of the whole repository at that point in time. It's a really key concept to get your head around. Version 2 here, I've changed file B. It's still got a full copy of file A and a full copy of file C. Again, there's some performance enhancements it makes that I'll talk about later, but logically, think about that's what you're seeing. So every single snapshot, right, every single version is complete. I've got everything in there for the whole repository. So what does it look like? When I create a Git repository, it creates me a .git folder on my disk. That is my repository. Everything outside of that is our working copy, the files that we're currently working on. Everything inside of that is our repository. It has this notion of tracked versus untracked files. So if I add a new file into my working directory, Git will say, hey, this is an untracked file. I'm not going to do anything with it. So you have to explicitly add it and say, I want you to track this file. That leads us into this idea of Git stages. So we have three different stages. Once we've tracked a file, we change it, it becomes modified. So just like in a traditional source control that we use today, we change a file, you get that little flag in Visual Studio, it knows you've edited it, right? So this is saying it's modified. When we've modified a file, this is something that It's tracked already, so we've added it. We modify it. We can stage it. And this is telling Git, the next time I commit, include this change. So my commit might include one change or 50 changes, right? So we're staging this change ready to be committed. And finally, we commit. And this says, okay, that change is now in the repository, right? So it's banked, it's safe. And it's important to know which one of those stages you're looking at, right? If you want to back things out, so you need to kind of know which things, which state you're in. And both Visual Studio and other Git clients will help you understand which stage you're in. So what does a commit look like? Git uses SHA-1 hashes to identify everything. That's what these numbers are saying here. So commit number, and that's the hash. And the hash means that it's immutable, right? I can't change it, otherwise I'd have to recalculate the hash. So once the commit is then hashed, that's safe, and it's the whole repository. Remember that? That single commit has the whole repository in it. So that one created file 1. We put in file1.txt. Think about trees like directories, and think about the blob there, the file, as folders. Remember I said it feels like a file system. Commit, folders, files. It's a whole repository. We come through and do another commit. And this commit we've added file 2. And here's that performance enhancement I was talking about before. You see the hash ID for file 1 matches the hash for file 1 in the first commit. Right, that's the performance enhancement. If you don't change file 1 in your second commit, it's just going to point to the hash that was in the first commit. Right, so it's still got a full copy. It's not storing a delta. It's just saying, hey, this is the same as that one. So it just links the hash together. And again, that's just performance. And these are compressed because you might think, well, this is going to be huge. Right? They're compressed, so the performance isn't too bad. Finally, our commits contain metadata. Who did it? They can also contain links to other commits. What was the parent? Where did this commit come from? And that's kind of the anatomy of a commit. The most important thing for now is it's everything. It's the whole repository. So we load up Visual Studio, and let's say we point it at a Git project, and it's going to tell you to install Git. And different sources will point you to different places. This is where that will point you. I'm going to say don't install it from here. So if you see this, cancel. Go to Chocolaty. Chocolaty, assuming you're doing this on Windows, is a Windows package manager. Search for Chocolaty, and you'll find the install, which is that first PowerShell command you need to run as execution policy is at least bypass. So that's going to pull down Chocolaty. And then, like NuGet, right, but more for applications, I can run this install posh Git. I'm going to show you that. So it's a Git client integrated into PowerShell. And finally, the second piece, install the credential, Git credential WinStore. If you don't do this, every time you do anything with your server repository, it's going to ask you for your credentials. That gets old real quick. So this is going to be key to just get that out of your way and get on with your workflow. Okay, so we've gone to Chocolaty. We've got PoshGit down. PoshGit relies on Git. So now I have Git and PoshGit, which means Visual Studio is happy. Okay, this is a one-step thing. I don't have to now do Git separately. Then to set up, we've got to give it a couple of pieces of information. These live in the configuration file, which lives in our home directory. This got to, before you do anything, ask you to set these variables. I want to know who you are. Give me your username and your email. What text editor do you want to use? Notepad, Sublime, you know, whatever your thing is. And a diff tool. You can wire up, you know, diffdog, beyond compare. And Visual Studio will set these for you if you're using Visual Studio. But if you're using any other Git client, you're going to want to set these. Okay. Why is this different, right? Let's talk about branches. A branch is just a file. But this is really one of the key moments for me. A branch is a file. A branch is a file with 40 characters in it. It's just a pointer to a commit. Remember, the commit's got the whole repository. All a branch is a text file on your disk inside your .git folder pointing to a commit ID. So when we create a Git repository, it automatically sets up a default branch called master. And here we've done three commits. So on commit one, master, the text file, the code inside that, the SHA-1 hash, just points to the SHA-1 hash of commit one. I do another commit. It updates the text file, master, to point to the second commit. I do my third commit. Right? That's all it's doing. That's all a branch is, a text file. Think about a branch on, you know, a server workspace. It's massive. The effort of creating a branch and merging a branch, right? It's such a pain, and it's really, really heavyweight. Branches in Git are called lightweight because they're just a text file on your local disk, right? And this is going to enable us to do to use branches differently than we're used to. This is why we kind of talk about fast branching. So here's a repository with three commits. Master is pointing to commit three. And this notion of head, right? Head is just saying, what's the local branch? What am I working on right now? And I'll show you what that looks like when we get to the first demo. I do a Git branch. So I say, create me a branch called ticket. And that's created another text file, right? Pointing to the same commit as is currently on master. So the checkout command just says, switch branches. I want to now work inside the ticket branch. And I want to create a new commit. So what's happened here? We've got commit 4, the text file that represents the branch of ticket now points to the commit 4 SHA-1 hash, and head is ticket, right, because I'm working in that branch. So you notice the master branch text file hasn't been changed. Okay? Let's have a look at that. Okay, I'm going to start with PoshGit. So this is the PowerShell integrated Git client. I'm going to make a new repository. So I can do that with this Git init. And you'll notice I've got some... right, it's telling me I've created a branch called master, and I'm in the master branch. So let's add a new file, and we'll call this index.html. Okay, so if I hit return to refresh PoshGit, it's showing me, hey, there's a file in here that I don't know about. Okay, so we get this red line, and I can say git status. And it says you've got one untracked file. Okay, so if you want to track it, this is the command to use. So it's pretty helpful. So let's say I want to add that file. Now I have another status. So I have a new file. It's staged, ready to be committed. Okay, so index one is there. So what happens if I now change that file again? Let's open it up again. Oops. And put some more text in. Okay, notice now I've got my green signal and red. So it's saying there's two things going on here. So just because I've changed a file in the directory doesn't mean it's automatically going to be picked up. I've already staged one change. I now have this other change that's been modified. Right, so it's not updated what I've already staged. So once it's staged, it's kind of out the way. So if I now want to commit that change that I've made, say, okay, I'll say commit, I give it a message. And run a status. Now all I've got left is the one file that I modified after I staged it, okay? So knowing which state you're in, which stage you're in is important. And I'm going to get rid of that that change just by saying I want to check out that file again. In other words, I could pull the latest out from my local repository. And now my working directory is clean. See that? Nothing to commit, working directory clean. That's the state you want to be in before you make any further changes. Okay, so let's look at branching. I've got this tool you get from pkotl on GitHub, and all the links are on the slides. This is a great tool for visualizing Git branching, merging, and the impact of Git commands on your repository. It can be hard without a good visualization tool. So this doesn't have a Git repository behind it, right? It's just a simulation. It's a great way to learn the impact of commands. And so it starts us off here with a master branch, right, with two commits. You see that asterisk next to master? That's saying that's head. That's currently we're in the master branch. And I'll do just a couple of commits. So I just run that git commit command. You see what's happening? It's just adding the commit, updating the file, right? Updating the master text file to point at the new SHA-1 hash. I'm going to create a branch. And we'll create a branch called ticket. Okay, so now I have two branches, two text files pointing to the same SHA hash, and I'm head is ticket. So I've in that dash B basically says move the head to ticket. I want to operate in ticket. And I'm doing a couple of commits in there. Now I'm going to change back to master. Oops. Learn to type. And let's do a couple of commits in there so we get some divergent history. Okay, so you see we're going in two different directions now. We've got the ticket includes commits 3 and 4, master 5 and 6. Remember, those branches are just pointers to commits. Every commit contains everything as at that point in time. Okay, so we can see how branching just moves those files, right, to point to different commits. And how fast it is, right? It's just creating these text files. Okay. Let's go back over here. Branching's easy. Merging's always the hard bit, right? Branching is cheap until we got to merge it. How do we do merges in Git? This is a screenshot of kind of where we're at to on that visualization. Right? If I say I want to merge feature one branch into master, or that ticket branch into master, Git is going to find the common ancestor. So in this case, it's a bit small, C2. And it's going to try and do a three-way auto-merge across those common ancestors, right? So that's the default behavior it's going to try and do for me. If there's conflicts, then it's going to warn me, and I'll give you a demo on what happens with conflicts. But it's going to try and auto-merge it. Finally, it's going to create a new commit, a merge commit, which is the changes, right? So I've looked across the ancestor and the two distinct changes in the branches, the common file, it gets added as a new commit. The last step we'll do then is delete the branch because everything's in master, right? We don't need that extra branch anymore. Git workflow, it generally tends to be focused around short-lived branching, right? Creating lots of branches and then deleting them. So quite in and out quite quickly. So the default is going to be a manual merge if we get a conflict. Let's have a look at that. If you're using Visual Studio, you won't see this too much, and you don't want to see it too much, but it's good to know what the default behavior is. If you've got Beyond Compare or Diffdog, you can set that up and get your typical merge screen you're going to be used to. Okay? So let's do our merge. We'll start over here and say, you know, we're ready to apply changes C3 and 4 onto our master branch. So I'm in master right now, and I'm going to merge ticket. So you see what's happened here. I now have a new commit. Make this a little bit bigger. C7. With two parents. Right? So it's pointing back up to C6 and C4. Anything with two parents, it's a merge commit. So you know that just by looking at the visualization. This happened as a result of a merge. Finally, I don't need that ticket branch anymore. Right? I've done my merge, I'm ready to go. So let's get rid of that. Say ticket's going to go. Just the file. Remember, a branch is a file. Didn't touch any of those commits. They're going to be around forever. So my history shows me what's happened here. All that did was delete the text file. Yep. When I saw this, I was thinking, well, how come C3 and C4 didn't disappear? I was kind of expecting that side to go, right? But it's this idea that it's just a text file. So what about a merge conflict? So go back to my posh Git, and I'm going to create a conflict. So we'll need a new branch. We'll call that ticket. And I'll change that file. Oops. So I'm shortcutting the add statement here. I mean, these switches you'll just get to over time if you choose to use a client like this versus Visual Studio. Okay, so I've added that. And I'm going to show you a visualization tool that lives inside Git. This is GitK comes with Git. It's a visualization tool for your repository. So if you're not sure what's going on, this is a great way to just check it out. So you can see here I've got master. That's what we started with. I created a branch called ticked, and it's got a new commit in it that's not in master. So let's go back to master and make a conflicting change. Let's look at our repository now. Git k dash dash all. So I've got my initial version, I've got ticked, and you can see now initial version we've split, right? So we've had this divergence between master, which was the last change, and ticked. So we've got the setup we want. Now we're going to try and do our merge. So I'm in master, I'm going to say I want to merge the ticked branch. And you can see here it says you've got a merge conflict, automatic merge failed, and it's unstaged that file. So the change is now unstaged. If I do a status here, it says index.html is modified, but it's unstaged. So what is it modified with? How does it know which change to make? Here's what it's done. This is the default behavior. It said in head, this is what you put in, and then underneath the equals line, this is what you put in for ticket. So those chevrons are telling me the branch name of the change and what the change is. Now, good luck using that on real code, right? So this is the default. You're going to want to change this probably to a more sophisticated diff tool. And I need now to manually tidy this up. Say, okay, I'm happy with this. I can say this is my merge change. Have a look at my git k. So now I have a commit with two parents. This is my merge. Right, so I've done this manual commit with the, I've resolved the conflicts myself. And the final step is going to be getting rid of that branch that I don't need anymore, right? Because we've merged the changes in. Okay, so ticked is gone, right? Just like the visualization we had, and all the commits are still there, just that tix file's gone. So we can see we're in a clean state now. So this is good. We can work locally, right? We can iterate. We can do our local work. At some point, we need to share it. We're going to think about remote repositories. And a remote repository is just like a remote branch, right? It's just a reference to a different repository somewhere. They have this naming convention. You know, I give the remote a name, and then there's a branch that I'm operating in, right? So I can have multiple remote repositories, multiple remote branches, just like I can have locally. How do I get there? I have a hosted solution. This could be hosted on my machine, right? It could be hosted on a server somewhere. Typically, we're going to put it on a Git hosting provider, TFS, Visual Studio Online, GitHub, you know, Bitbucket, because we want this idea of a golden repository. Where do we deploy from? Where do we test from? Where is the thing that really is the latest, the master? So you as a team have to figure that out. Generally, we're going to put that on a server somewhere in one of these hosting providers. When I want to pull that down and start working on it, the terminology in Git is to clone, right? So think about Git latest, right? Just clone, same idea. Pull the repository down to my local machine. So I've got this repository up here. It's got three commits, the master branch pointing at commit three. I run this clone command, and it pulls it down for me. It creates this new branch called origin master. Origin is a convention term. It's the name it gives to the remote repository that you cloned from. So where did this come from? So you can see here it's pulled that down. Now I've got two tix files, right? Two branches. What's origin pointing to? What's my local master? I can't move origin master by doing local commits. The only way I can move that is push my changes back up to the server or pull your changes down from the server. And that's just going to say the remote repository, the last time you checked, was pointing to this commit ID. Okay. So history is local, right? Committing things locally doesn't touch your remote repository. That's a distinct step that you have to take. So you can work locally for as long as you want or need to, then you interact with the remote server. And you can push whole branches, right? I can say this branch, this TKID branch I created, push it up to the remote repository, I want someone else to work in it. Lots of people in Git do what they call issue-driven development, right? We take a feature, we create a branch, we do all our work inside that branch, we push it, then we delete the branch. So this constant creation and deletion of branches is really common. People talk about rewriting history in Git. Oh, it's not safe. You can change the history. It's really dangerous. You know, there's this kind of vibe around it. And to some extent, you sort of can. But remember, commits, SHA-1 hash. Can't touch it. Can't change it. Right? Once it's hashed, that's it. It's not something I can go in and then manipulate and the hash, you know, is unchanged. But we can do this idea of rebasing. Rebasing is just a different way to do a merge. Okay, so there's two different main ways to do it, and I'll show you what they look like. Let's go back over here. And I'm going to create the same branch format we had before. Love this. Guess at where the cursor is. Okay. Couple of commits. Didn't see that. Great. Same place we had before. Instead of doing a merge, I'm going to do a rebase. All rebase means is, imagine that I didn't take my TKID branch until after C6. So I want to pick up C3 and 4, what I've done in TKID, and replay them on top of C6. So I'm rebasing it, right? Imagine the base was 6, not C2. Replay those changes forwards. So it's easier to see it than probably try and explain it. So I am in, I'm going to move over to the TKID branch. And I'm going to say git rebase to master. Watch what happens here. So it has picked those up and reapplied them right on top of C6. And you notice they've got the little exclamation mark. It's deltas. So what do I have to do to C6 to make it look like what you did after C3? Similarly, to get to C4. Right, so those other commits, they haven't disappeared. They've gone grey there. They've got no parents, which means at some point Git will remove them. But I can go back to them right now if I want to. Okay, people do this because they want this clean linear history. I don't want you to see the fact that I've branched. I want it to look beautifully clean. I only do this locally. Never, ever, ever do this to any change you've ever pushed to anyone else, because you're going to mess with all the commit IDs. This is a local operation. Before I push, I want to make my history real clean. I could always also have used that dash I syntax, and all that says is I want to do more fine-grained control. Maybe I want to take C3 and 4 and squash them into one commit. This git squash, you'll hear about it. Again, so what would happen is there, it looks like I made one commit on top of master. So you might have made 500 changes, and you make it into this beautiful single commit that just sits on top of master. Great for code reviews, right? There's one change. Just go and look at this change set. There's all the changes that matter are in there in one place. I don't have to look at your history of change it, back it out, change it, back it out. Right? So that's why people do this rebase on their local repository. Finally, I need to actually do the merge, right? So I need to go back to master here because it's not pointing to the latest commit. And say merge TKID. All that does, update that text file, point to this one. You see how it just skipped downwards? No new commits got added. That's called a fast forward, and you'll notice it says that on the left-hand side. And that's, again, the beauty of rebase. Because it's now linear, all it does is say move the commit forwards until we hit the result of the rebase. Okay, so last step, I can now get rid of TKID. And I'm in this clean state, right, ready to go. Okay, time's catching up with us, we'll keep moving. Visual Studio and Git. So what can I do in Visual Studio? This all looks great. How do I do it without using the command line for all of this? We're going to go straight to that demo. I have created a new repository in Visual Studio Online, just a new project, and said use Git as the repository. And this is what happens when I connect to that team project in Visual Studio. Right? We all know how to connect to a team project. It's going to ask me to clone the repository, step one. Right, so I've got Git installed because I've got PostgreSQL. I'm going to say, okay, let's clone the repository. Where do I want to clone it to? I have no, there's nothing in it. It's empty. It's a brand new team project. Okay, so it's been cloned successfully. I'm going to create a new project just so that we have something to push up. Okay, here's my project. Now, if I go on the right-hand side here and see changes, these are the included changes. So if I commit, these are the things that are going to go in. Hopefully this is familiar to us all. And I go through and I can look at unsynced commits. So is anything that is in the repository that I don't know about yet, or anything local that my remote repository doesn't know about yet? Let's start with a local commit. Say, okay, in my changes, into master, see, it's asking me what branch, I'm going to push my initial commit. Okay, good, that's gone. And see this? So CodeLens is working for Git now. So if you've got millions of dollars and you can afford Ultimate, then you'll have CodeLens, and you'll see you get integration with Git where you didn't used to. So just that for the rich people. Okay, my commit's gone. Let's go back to my unsynced commits. And it's showing me you've got a commit locally that isn't on the server. You can push it if you want to, right? So I can push it up to the server. Also in here, I can view my history. So I can go in here to actions, view my history, showing me this is master, the head is master, it's red, right? This is what I'm pointing on. I can right-click on here and hit revert. Revert is a basically create a compensating commit to undo what I just did. So it's kind of like rollback. It's going to create a new change to back out the change that this commit did, right? So again, I don't have to drop out to the command line for that. I want to push that change up to the server. Great, so I've got now no outgoing commits. From here, I can look at my settings. I'm going to go around here into settings and choose Git settings. Remember I said you need to set up some of those email addresses, right? This is where I do that inside Visual Studio. Forward that one for you. Right, so set up what my email, what I want my commit identifiers to look like. Okay, so finally, I'm going to go into here into branches, and I'm going to create a new branch. I'm going to create a feature one branch. Right, so I can do this from inside Visual Studio. And let's make a change in this branch. So this is my active branch. Notice it's bold. And we'll push that change, we'll commit that change. And maybe that was for a bug fix, right? Maybe we needed to fix a bug to do that. So let's go ahead and before we push that, we'll create a bug. And we'll associate that bug. We'll associate that bug with our chicken, right? The normal things that we'd expect to do in Visual Studio and TFS. So we'll save that. Now if I look in unfinished work, there it is. So back to my changes. Notice this related work items section. Right, that's what I'm going to put this bug in. So I'm just going to drag that bug over into related work items. And it's going to associate it for me. Now notice, I said at the start, this is just Git, real Git. We've left just Git at this point. Right, this is because I'm using hosted Visual Studio Online to get that functionality. Right, if I'm using GitHub, obviously I can't do that. GitHub bug integration, right, it's not going to happen. Great, so I've got that change. Let's commit that change. And we'll go to our unsynced commits and push that up. Have we committed it yet? Change. Before I do that, let's go to my branches here. My two branches. One thing I want to show you here, if I minimize this a little bit and This a little bit smaller. I'm going to go to the same folder here. Okay, this is the same repository looking at it from PoshKit. Right, you notice that if I look at what's bold, it's feature one right now. I'm going to change git checkout to master. If I'm in the right repository, which I'm not. Okay, I'm in feature one right now, right? So I'm going to check out to master. So watch Visual Studio behind this window. See that? So it's in sync. It knows what you're doing with the git command show. So when you do have to drop out and do things on the command line because they're not in Visual Studio yet, it's going to keep up with you, okay? And because I just flipped, it changed my working directory. Right, I'm now in master, which means this change isn't here. If I go back into feature one, my change appears. Right, so swapping between branches is just refreshing my working directory. Okay, so let's see if I go into my unzip commits, how's my history looking? Okay, so my feature one is pointing to this commit, master's pointing here. Now, I'm going to push my change up to... Okay, it's gone. Is it gone? What am I missing here? Right. Two branches. Ah, publish. Okay. So my branch was local only, which is why it wasn't letting me push up to the server. I've got to publish that branch so my server knows about it, then I can push my change up. Okay, so that's now gone. That branch now exists on Visual Studio Online. So let's take a look at what that looks like on Visual Studio Online. Actually, I'll do. Here is my repository. Let's refresh that. Okay, so all I'm looking at is the code tab of that project. On the right-hand side, you can see I can see the branches, feature one and master. Here's the code that's in here. You can see it's a Git repository, right, from this this Git symbol. I can go in here to security, and I can set specific, you know, can you contribute? What rights have you got? And so you can get more fine-grained permission because they've backed Git with SQL, right? So we've got some enterprise-friendly features like you'd expect from Microsoft, some more security than you typically get with a Git repository. I can look at my commits. So, you know, what's the history? This is the history in master. What branches have I got? And this is kind of nice. I can see that feature one is ahead of master by this one commit, and I can drill through and look at that commit. Right, so that's kind of nice functionality. I can see the relationship between the two. Now, let's get to some good stuff. Pull requests. Pull requests are new, brand new in Team Foundation Server on-premise, 2013.4, that update they shipped in, and they're on Visual Studio Online. So pull requests, server-side feature. I'm going to use this to show you a possible workflow you might want to try if you're going to move to Git. I'm going to create a new pull request, right? So we'll show you what that looks like. So it's asking me to say, what branch are your changes in? My changes are in feature one, right? You just saw me push those changes up. So relative to master, they're in feature one. I can add, you know, why I did it. And the default gets assigned to the team, or I could assign it to people. Think about this from a code review point of view. It's a great way to make sure the code meets the standard we're looking for from everyone. So we do this pull request model, and it gets assigned to the team and say, okay, check out this code I've done. I can put some comments in there. This is the description of the code down here. I'm happy with that. I'm going to create the pull request. Now, saving me time to flick over to another user and go in another user, I'll just review it myself. Here is the pull request main screen. I could set up an alert, notify me when there are any pull requests to the team or to me, or we could get notifications in the team room. So we can see here, requested by me or assigned to the team. So let's go in and check it out. So we can have a discussion, this discussion tab. you know, we can start backwards and forwards. You know, what have you done? Make sure that everyone is happy with the intent. I can look at your code. Right, and so we can get this backwards and forwards, what code changes have you made and why, overall discussions, and at some point, maybe we make sure that enough people, maybe it's two people have looked at it and said they're happy. Right, so we say that I am happy with the changes and I'm comfortable to let you do the merge. So we go through this review process. I'm going to add on here myself as a reviewer. See, these are probably a little bit difficult. Up, you know, yes, no, Facebook style. Not sure why they did that, but happy or sad. So I can say yes, I'm happy. Click on the right thing. And add the right Rob Mayer, maybe. There we go. So I'm happy. Looks good to me. And you can see now that approved has gone to green, and it's ready to merge. So there's no conflicts in here. So I can say complete merge. And we've pulled it into master. So the last step I can go through now is get rid of that branch. And again, I can do that from inside Visual Studio Online. So, okay, we don't necessarily need master anymore. Sorry, feature one anymore. Come back. Feature one. Oops, not from there. Branches. Okay, I'm going to come back to that. I can delete the branch from in here if I find the right place to do it. Did it? Excellent, thank you. Delete source branch. Well, that was obvious, wasn't it? Right in my face. Okay, so that's gone. The reason I'm saying this is a really cool call request, code reviews are rubbish. Code review functionality existing in Team Foundation Server. It's really horrible, right, if you've ever tried to use it. B, it's a premium feature. This is not. Basic license gets you pull requests. So if you sign up as a basic user of Visual Studio Online, which is like nothing for teams of five or less, or I can't remember, you know, $10 or whatever it is, it's real cheap as a basic user, you get pull requests. So you just got great code review functionality basically for nothing. Or if you're already using Team Foundation Server or you're using Visual Studio Online, it's a great great way to do code reviews. And the world is moving to that pull request model, right? It came out of open source, it's become a really common way to work. Okay, I don't want to miss out on my good demo. 7 minutes. Other stuff, not in Visual Studio, cherry picking. I can branch to a single commit ID, right? I can do a lot of advanced things in Git that will come in Visual Studio, but they've concentrated on the main workflow for now. So you might have to drop out to command line if you're going to do some of this stuff. Hooks. I can create script hooks. So every commit, maybe it minifies my JavaScript files or beautifies them, right? So server and client-side commits, pre and post commit hooks I can create inside Git. People do all sorts of wacky things with those. Tags are what you expect. I can name a commit because I might want to branch to it or revert to it later. Before I talk about workflows, I want to show you this. Remember, this is a source control tool, right? And I'm going to show you hopefully something pretty cool. I'll show you in here. I have created this project and a lot of history, and you see this one down here. This broke it. I broke the system, right? I introduced a breaking change ages ago. And you know that scenario, at some point someone says, hey, it's broken, we got a regression error. Hey, go figure out where it broke, will you? You're going, oh man, there's like 1,000 changes to this thing in the last 6 months. Which commit broke it? Git and it gives us some help with that. We get this bisect command. Does anyone use bisect? Cool. Okay, so git bisect. What it does, looks down that list of history and does a binary search. It says, you know what? I'll give you the commit halfway through what you said was the last good one and the last bad one. try that. Didn't work? Okay, I'll cut that in half again. Or if it did work, I'll cut this side in half, and in half, and in half. So it gets you the shortest way, right, or a lot shorter than manually, to the bad commit. This is pretty cool. So let's have a look at this in action. Okay. I want to go to this repository. So let's just find out where this is living. And I'm going to run git bisect start. And it's going to say you need to be at the top level. Okay, so it started this process. The first thing it wants to know from me, where was the good commit? And all I know is it worked once. So the very first commit, right? Let's get the commit ID and say, okay, git good was definitely that one. What was bad? Well, the last one was bad. Sorry? Ah, good point. Thank you. Bad. Okay, bad was this one. So it says it's going to have five goes at it, and it's bisected to this first one that says added withdraw. So you see this back to the history. It's updated my working directory, so I can now compile that. I can test it. Did it work or not? Well, no, it didn't, unfortunately. It's still bad. And so I can tell git. I say git bisect was still bad. So it cuts it again. It says, okay, I've now gone to this commit called docs. Right, so it's done a half again. Let's find me the right one. Say, okay, we're now in docs. And no, it's still bad. Okay, now it's found this one called broke it. Well, that was still bad because I know that's the one I broke it. Okay, we're back to the start. So let's say good. So because you said that one was good, it says, well, this was the first bad one. So this was the one that caught the problem. Now that's pretty cool. Right, source control system, right? I've got, but there's more. There's more, steak knives. So I'm going to take that out and say reset. So back to the cleaning. I can pass a script to that, right? I've built a unit test that says, test that function and see if it works or not. I'm going to pass a script that executes that unit test to that bisect command, and it's going to do all that for me while I go and have coffee, to rapturous applause from the audience. When it works.
That is pretty good.
Save it. Save it till it works. Okay, here's my script. It's going to build it, right? MS build. Check the exit status. Run an end unit test. This has got to be outside the repository because we're winding the history back, right? And it would wind the test back. So you move the test outside the repository, and I'm going to pass this script to that command line. Okay, so we'll start again. We'll say git bisect start. Okay, what was the first, what was good? Same deal. Okay, we know the very first one was good. We know the last one was bad. And get the right one again, this one. Okay, so it's done the first split, and I'm going to say git bisect run this guy here. Whoops. And paste that. Okay. Right, so you should see we're building, there's MS build, running in unit, seeing there's an error, rolling back, doing the next split, right? Doing the binary search. And I'm going for coffee, yeah, I'm working really hard. And there we go, right? There's it's found the commit that broke it. That's the first commit.
Well,
Rob
would say if you had unit tests, you should have
But if you are one of the small percentage of people that don't unit test everything, you write the unit test when it breaks, right? Okay, wrapping up. If you do centralized work, this works fine, right? I can still get all the goodness of Git and use a centralized flow, have a central server that we all go through. Have a look at pull requests, right? It's an awesome way to work. Branch by issue, branch by feature. Do my work locally. I can swap between master and my other branch if I need to do hot fixes and things. Becoming really popular, driven out of open source. Git flow is, I think, a bit too complicated, but it's a common Git workflow that people are using. You might want to look that one up. It's rocket fast, this thing, right? From what you're used to, this thing just flies. So the speed that you get, the smile on your devs' faces, is they're going to thank you for this, right, if you give it a try. It is different. It's not going to behave in the way you think sometimes. Some of that mind shift of branches of files, it's really, really key. Visual Studio is good, and it's just getting better, right? They're investing a lot to bring it up to parity with their support for their traditional version control. And you can host your repositories on Visual Studio online or now in Team Foundation Server on-premise, and that works really well. Two hands-on labs, if you're interested. One on Git specifically, if you want to play around with this some more. That pkotl, definitely have a look at that because you can see the impact of those visualizations. Really useful. And I am flat out of time. Thank you very much, everybody.